Join us, won't you, for the University of Alaska Radio Forum. Each week at this time, a panel of experts discuss a topic of interest. Here, with this week's panel and topic, is your moderator.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. This evening's claims, and this is a topic which I wish we had an hour and a half to discuss instead of a half an hour. We have two guests whom I feel are highly qualified to discuss the subject. With us this evening is Jim Thomas, Public Relations Officer for the Alaska Federation of Natives. And Jim, with your radio background, this must seem like old home week to you to have a microphone in front of you.
Just a little bit.
And also with us is Barry Jackson, a Fairbanks lawyer and legislator, who has been an attorney for the AFN and has long been active in the Alaska Native land claims issue. Barry, this is your third time on a program that I've hosted, and it's always a pleasure to have you on. I'm glad to have you here again this evening.
Thank you very much.
I think the first thing we should discuss, Barry, and this would probably be something you should field, would be a brief history of the legal aspects of the Alaska Native land claims issue.
Well, legal aspects actually go back to the time of Catherine the Great when she said in the charter to the Russian-American company that the company should not disturb the natives in Alaska and that their only right was to establish trading posts. Of course, while we all recognize that throughout the years there have been expressions in the law later, he added, to protect native rights. Really, the history, the modern history of native land claims really starts with statehood and the right of the state to select 103 million acres of vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land in Alaska. And at the same time, there was a disclaimer in the Statehood Act disclaiming any interest in lands held for natives. There's a good question as to what that means. But in any event, the state, immediately after statehood, began a program of state selection. Up here in the interior, they began selecting lands near Minto. And when Minto became aware of this, they became very much disturbed. At that time, it looked as though things might be worked out. About half the lands of the Minto area were actually selected by the state at the request of Minto to protect Minto from third-party entries. Unfortunately, the state now wants to keep the land they selected for Minto. And some years ago, shortly after statehood, Minto brought the issue to a head with a meeting here in Fairbanks, which effectively stopped a program that the state had begun to open up the lands for general public recreation. Of course, the lands already are used by people in the Fairbanks area for recreation, but the state was proposing to build a road into the area. This, in turn, led to the formation of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, which was intended to help protect the rights of the natives in the land, and this movement rapidly spread statewide, and regional organizations were formed all over the state. They began to realize the need for having a single entity to speak for all the natives, and they came together around 1966 to form the Alaska Federation of Natives.
I just might add in there, Barry, that in the Southeast, many years back, the Alaska Native Brotherhood also started its land claims proceedings for the Southeastern area, which developed into the Tlingit and Haida Central Council, and they, of course, got a settlement, which was very inadequate. I think this is one of the reasons that we participate in the total land claims picture, is that because the natives of the North feel that we were very poorly treated and that the settlement of some $7.5 million was inadequate for the some 20 million acres of land to which we held title.
This was important in another respect because it demonstrated, I think, to everybody in Alaska that court proceedings to settle the claims were very time-consuming, very long, took a long time to get through, very complicated. They involved very high attorney's fees, 10%, 8% of the award, whereas we anticipate in this case that Congress will keep the attorney's fees to probably less than one-half of 1%. We became, as attorneys and the native leaders themselves, became aware that it would be in their best interest to seek a settlement from Congress rather than going through court proceedings, and so that's the route we have taken.
May I just inject a note here? There have been all kinds of accusations, of course, against the Alaska Native people and the Alaska Federation of Natives. One of the accusations is that the natives are being run by the attorneys, that the attorneys came to us. Just as demonstrated in what Barry had to say, the situation brought us to our attorneys. And my feeling is just because a man goes into a divorce proceeding doesn't make him an expert on divorce. This is the way I feel about land claims. Simply because we as a native people have brought the issue does not make us experts on land claims. We need legal help, and this is why we have the expertise that we have on regional levels as well as on the national level with our national attorneys.
Jim, you mentioned the situation which started the whole ball rolling, the situation being the state selecting lands which were prime lands. And you mentioned this before the program, I think we're talking about.
Yes, just as Barry explained, once the state began this great selection of lands, I think they've selected some, is it 13 million acres now? They began encroaching upon the natives who, up to this time, were really free to roam wherever they wished for their food and survival.
We are still checking. Jim mentioned a point which I think is important.
Still checking many of the statements made
attorneys
during the 72-hour
and working
ordeal
with the native leaders throughout
nevertheless,
the course
there are certain
of
things
the land
that we
claims
have
movement
concluded.
Have taken the attitude that
seem to consider
theirs is not to determine policy.
To the
their role is to suggest policy problems and possible solutions. And we really have acted in a manner very similar to the Legislative Affairs Agency in the state legislature, which acts as a service agency. They draw legislation, but they don't determine policy. And the attorneys have never determined policy through this.
Jim, what has been the AFN, the Alaska Federation of Natives, policy in regard to what it wants and also in regard to other Alaskans, non-Native Alaskans?
Well, I think this brings us to a point of some of the things that have been said regarding the Alaska Natives, particularly to the Goldberg Bill. Now, we determined the policy. We made a policy statement, I think it was in June 20th of 1969. From this policy statement, where we met several times and we went with a fine comb over all of the different phraseology and so on, with the help of our regional attorneys, we drafted a policy statement out of which a bill was drafted for us by an attorney in Washington, D.C., one of the foremost land claims attorneys known as Arthur Lazarus. Now, this bill was in no way a Goldberg bill. It was a bill that was drafted from our own position and our own desires in what we want in the settlement of the claims. After all, we're giving up our rights and we're asking for this participation in return.
What are the provisions of that bill?
Well, I'll have I'll ask Barry to explain what the Aboriginal different provisions are.
Well, very briefly, the bill has four features. First of all, land. Second, money. Thirdly, an interest in what I call the fruits of the land. And fourthly, the structure, the administration provisions, how the land and the money will be handled.
Moreover,
now, on the land, the natives have asked for 40 million acres. Originally, the task force set up by Governor Hickel wanted 80 million acres. They essentially compromised that figure in discussions with then-Governor Hickel and came down to 40 million acres. They are requesting $500 million, which the Nixon administration supports. Essentially, they have asked for a continuing interest, or an interest in the fruits of the land in the form of a 2% royalty. And this is not altogether a new idea. The state legislature in 1968 enacted a royalty equal to 5% of the state's proceeds on future revenues from state lands. And fourthly, in the structure, the AFN has asked that the money be distributed among three levels of business corporations. And I say business corporations advisedly because it's our hope that the money will be used and the land will be used for economic development of the whole state, which will benefit the entire society, at the same time giving a basic means of both employment and ownership, in other words, full participation in a capitalist society.
By so doing, the Supreme Court once again
asked that these corporations be, one, a statewide corporation, two, 12 regional corporations, which largely reflect the business and, the racial and the geographic divisions within Alaska. And thirdly, that village-level corporations be allowed to be established for those villages that want them. We anticipate that in many of the regions, they will not have their own village corporations, and the land and the money would be actually vested in the regional corporation. Well, that's what the natives have asked for. The Nixon administration has agreed with the idea of land, but not 40 million acres. They've suggested about, I'd say, about 12 million acres. The Nixon administration has suggested that all of the land and the money, or at least all of the money, be vested in a single corporation composed of all of the natives, and the significant federal controls be retained on this federally chartered corporation. This would be one of the 100 largest corporations in the United States, in a state which has perhaps 0.2% of the gross national product. We really think it would be a concentration of economic and necessarily political power that would not be in the interests of the natives or the state. But it reflects so for this reason, we're opposing that. Unfortunately, Governor Miller still believes that we are correct in our approach to how the land and the money should be handled.
And
the Nixon administration does not support the idea of a continuing interest in the fruits of the land, either as a 2% royalty or in any other form.
When you mention federal participation here as in an advisory capacity, this conjures up, in my mind, organizations like BIA and outfits like this, which I think the natives have had some concern over. Is this a matter of concern among the natives right now, Jim? Or not?
It certainly is. We would like to be able to have the opportunity to make our own successes, make our own failures, and we certainly know as a Native people what our problems are and what some of the best solutions are to those problems.
I read in the New York Times the other day that they consider Secretary of the Interior Hickel one of the most viable and, for the president's era, one of the most energetic men in the cabinet. Now, if he suggested 80 million acres while he was governor, 40 million acres?
Although I should say that he somewhat backed off from that position when he was governor. But,
has he been influential in the Nixon administration's policies here?
Very much so. I think he deserves a great deal of credit for getting the Nixon administration to come up with $500 million, and their suggestion was not only that, but that it would be a direct appropriation. And to my knowledge, the first time in the history of the United States that the administration has ever submitted a bill which was not just an authorization but also an appropriation.
How does the Alaskan congressional delegation, Senators Gravel, Stevens, and Congressman Pollock stand on this issue? What do they suggest?
Well, they've switched positions. I shouldn't say they, but particular members have switched positions so many times, I'd have to ask Barry to fill me in on what the latest actual position is by these members.
Well, it's hard to tell, actually, because I think it's fair to say that all three of them would like to support the AFN bill as far as they can. But each of them has problems with particular features of the AFN bill. They have now appeared to be agreed that there should be some form of state participation,
and
we have proposed this in the form of a 2% royalty on both state lands and federal lands. I'm not sure that that's the way it's going to come out, but I am convinced that Congress will provide for some kind of a continuing interest and some form of state participation. And I think this is really healthy for Alaska and is in the interest of the whole state. Because Congressman Saylor, for example, he is the senior Republican in the House committee, and he's the man who would have been Secretary of the Interior, except that Hickel got it first. has been introducing a bill in Congress for the last several Congresses to do away with the state's 90% revenue sharing split with the federal government, revenues from federal lands. Now, it's our position that if we could get a portion of that diverted to the natives, we can perhaps stop Saylor from having his way in taking away the 90% completely.
This has been our problem all down through the land claims history, and particularly in relation to the 2% override, which we're requesting, is that in the past, under the Statehood Act, the United States Congress has been extremely generous with the state of Alaska. In other words, they got, what, a third of the land, almost, 103 million acres. In addition to that, they got almost 100% of the royalties, a 90-10.
On the balance of the land.
Right. Yep. So it's the state has been very fortunate in this respect, and it's difficult for us as natives to understand the position of the governor in not wanting the state to share any of this fortune with the native people, who, after all, are the first people of the land.
You raised an interesting point here. What does Governor Miller want, and what have his suggestions been?
Well, as I understand it, the governor does not want the state to participate in any way, and particularly on a revenue-sharing basis.
Which means he is opposed to the 2%.
Rather. Very much so, yes.
What other features has he suggested, Jim, do you know?
Well, of course, he's against any 40 million acres of land. I believe he's also on the 12 million, isn't he? Or even less than that.
His official position seems to be even less than 12 million acres, but I would think that he would be satisfied if that's what Congress gave.
And how about the cash settlement? What does he think would be equitable here?
The 500 million, I believe, is the amount he discusses.
The amount of land has been something which has been the cause of a certain amount of debate within the state, and I would say that would be an understatement. The 40 million acres, old people like trappers, recreational people, hunters, and also people interested in, say, mining are concerned about this amount of land. Say a person is mining in a particular area, and this area is in dispute right now, and it is awarded to the natives. Do prior rights with stand up here, Barry, or not?
Yes, they do, and it's been the position of the native leaders throughout the whole movement that they would respect the rights, prior rights of people in the land, both homestead entries and every other form. And I might mention on this that this brings up the point that the native leaders have also tried to follow a policy of accommodation to meet the legitimate needs of private interests such as the miners, conservationists, the sportsmen, and the legitimate needs of the state itself. Now, I'm not certain that we've done a perfect job on this. As a matter of fact, I'm sure we haven't, as demonstrated by the recent problem on the question of the lands in the national forests in southeast Alaska. But we have tried to invite all groups, special interest groups, to come to us and discuss with us what their problems are that they see with regard to the settlement, to see if we can't adjust what we're asking for so that the needs of all parties can be met.
This is one of the problems, Jerry. As we have said many times before, we have taken a high road of trying to encourage as much public discussion on the issue as possible. And for various groups to take drastic positions against the settlement or even segments of the settlement without really discussing it with us as a native people is unfortunate. And as Barry has indicated, we are very willing to sit down and discuss the issues and the problems with those who are concerned.
As public relations officer for AFN, Jim, you get out and meet many people and talk about the Alaska Native land claims issue. Has there been opposition to the issue? Where is the opposition coming from, and what are the points of contention other than the ones we've talked about?
Primarily, the opposition is coming from the administration within the state, as well as, of course, some businessmen who have gone back to Washington, D.C. to lobby against particularly the 2% override. Otherwise, we have gained substantial support across the country. Within our state alone, the Alaska Federation of Labor, which has a membership of some 10,000 within the state, has substantially endorsed the AFN. So have the Teamsters, the Alaska Teamsters, which has a membership of some 5,000 people. As you know, the National Council of Churches across the nation, with some 46 million people, came out with a unanimous endorsement for the AFN position. And just recently, Mr. Walter Reuther, who is president of the United Auto Workers, came out in support of, I believe, every point that we have asked for.
Looking at the picture, Barry, and you've been at it now for, what, 10 years involved in this as an attorney?
By no means. But there is an attorney in Southeast Alaska who's been involved in it at least since 1913. So,
looking at, with your background in this issue, what does it look like? What will come out of Congress?
Well, it's difficult to predict what Congress or any legislature is going to do, but I think that Congress is going to provide for something between 10 and 25 million acres. I think they will provide up to $500 million, and it may well be under $500 million, although all of the bills and all of the proposals now before Congress do provide for $500 million. I think they will have some form of revenue sharing with the state and some form, probably the same thing, for providing for a continuing interest in the fruits of the land. This may or may not be in perpetuity or permanent. And finally, the bill will provide for some means of settlement. And to me, right now, the greatest danger is in this area. We're talking about enough land and enough money that the key problem now is whether or not the natives are going to be able, at least in the course of the time, to be able to manage their own affairs through these corporations, or whether we will find that Congress will exercise perpetual supervision both directly and through the Department of the Interior.
Will the bill be forthcoming this year that will be approved by Congress, do you think?
Well, we hope that the Senate committee will clear a bill either in January or early February, that there will be floor action this spring in the Senate, that the House will act on it promptly, and that we'll have a bill through both houses by, say, August or September.
Jim, will the natives accept anything less than the proposal they've put forth now, do you think?
Well, I can't exactly answer that. I could answer it in this manner, that there are various forms of settlement. We have asked for it in one formula. There are various formulas that can come to nearly the same thing. So it all depends on what comes out of the Senate and out of the House. Barry, you might explain just briefly the different processes that the bill has to go through once it comes out of, say, both houses of the Congress.
The Senate bill will not be the bill that passes the House. The House will write its own version, which will vary substantially, I believe, from the Senate. We're inclined to think that the Senate will be the most generous, and yet at the same time, I have the feeling that the House is more sympathetic to our desire to have regional corporations, and that the House may be more sympathetic when it comes to terms of amount of land. The House committee, after it sends its bill to the House floor, will pass it. Then there will be a conference committee selected from both committees of the two houses, and they will sit down and hammer out a compromise version and take it back to each house for final passage. Now, you mentioned the question of what would be unacceptable. Well, really, this issue is going to be settled by Congress, whether we like it or not. And it doesn't really make much difference whether we oppose the result or whether we like it. I would say, however, that we might find very, very strenuous objection on the part of the natives if there isn't enough land and if there isn't adequate means for control of their own affairs. And what is enough land, I can't say. But I think something that's often overlooked is that the natives have a very strong religious feeling for the land. They're prepared to turn over to the United States and the state when it wants to select it the great majority of the land in Alaska, but they want to keep a reasonable amount. Now, what that is, I don't know. We've asked for $40 million, but at some figure, it's not going to meet general acceptance, and there would be very great opposition.
What would happen if, Jim, say the natives did oppose the settlement that came out of Congress? Do you have any, would there be any legal recourse?
Well, once again, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know exactly what course we could take. I could mention, however, that Congressman Meads, in an interview in Anchorage with the natives, made the statement that if the settlement out of Congress should be so completely inadequate, and I can't say what that would be, then definitely the natives should again should take the recourse of taking this to the Court of Claims. Now, our counselor here would know more about that than I would.
Is that a long process then, Barry?
Yes, it is, and it would require that Congress pass a bill authorizing us to sue in the Court of Claims. This, however, raises the danger of tying up Alaska's land so that nobody can use it for years to come, and making it impossible for the natives to realize any benefit from the settlement during the current generation.
This would probably put the damper on, say, oil, any more oil exploration and things like this, then.
It could. I wouldn't say that it necessarily would. It would depend on the terms of the legislation. The terms of the legislation allowed for land to be conveyed by the Court of Claims. It might effectively tie up a great deal of land.
I just might add, Jerry, that to allay some of the fears, we have been talking about state, regional, and local corporations, and we're looking toward development and keeping the funds resourceful. The funds will not go into individual hands. This should be clearly understood. There are some people in the state who still feel that possibly this will go into individual hands. It will not.
Will it be a system somewhat like the Tionics had after their settlement or not?
I think Tionic is one of the glowing examples of what could happen across the state of Alaska if the natives are given the opportunity to use these funds as they see fit, not without control from the outside.
Well, this brings up another point, and that is that the Tionics have become deeply engaged in business in Anchorage. They own a portion or a major interest in Spinard Utilities. They own a title company. They own an airline. They've got a majority interest in a construction firm. They own buildings. The money from the settlement is going to be fed into the Alaskan economy. It's going to be homegrown capital. It's going to be controlled from Alaska and not from New York or Houston. And it will be used for the development of Alaska, and all businesses in Alaska are going to benefit from this. Airlines are going to be carrying far more freight as we begin to develop decent housing in the villages. Transportation companies generally are going to benefit. Construction companies are going to benefit. Certainly, we want natives employed in these enterprises.
That's right.
But the amount of money involved is so large that it will represent a very major capital source for the state of Alaska, and one which is going to stay here and which will be responsive to the needs of Alaska.
Dave is holding up one finger saying 1 minute, so to give you an idea, the time is going so fast. But, Jim, one question then that should be asked is, will a native be able to stand affluence? Looking at the Tionics, they certainly have been able to take the affluence and handle it well.
Yes. Well, I don't believe it will be affluence. We like to talk of our dollar as a high-velocity dollar because it will take some time before the native even reaches what Alaska's non-native today is enjoying.
Our guests this evening have been Jim Thomas, Public Relations Officer for the Alaska Federation of Natives, and Barry Jackson, attorney and legislator, who is also employed as a lawyer for the Alaska Federation of Natives. And our topic of discussion has been the Alaska Native land claims issue. And as I've said before, this is a show that we could have discussed an hour instead of a half an hour. Thank you for being with us.
You've been listening to the University of Alaska Radio Forum. This program was produced in the studios of KUAC for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.